All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Woodward Tigers podcast here at woodwardsports.com. I'm Riley Oksami, it's Chris Brown and Youper. And you can find us on Spotify, iHeartMedia, iTunes, and Stitcher, and also Spreaker. And one of the things we did clear up, by the way, I have to give a shout out to Carryover at Fansided. We have the redirect. It's our old feed for Tigers Radio. For a while, it was leading to a feed that wasn't working, so now everything's straighten out. So if you're wondering what the hell happened to the show, you're subscribed to the feed. Everything's been put together now, finally. So props to Carrie. But it was funny. So yeah, Fansided, tonight Robert Murray tweeted out that the Tigers have just as many home runs as Kyle Schwarber, 12, but it's actually wrong. It was 13. The Tigers have one more home run than Kyle Schwarber, but they're not going to take it down. It's going viral, so. I can take it L, so
close enough.
Close enough. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's still pathetic either way. It doesn't it's still bad anyway. It doesn't matter. But shout out to everybody in the YouTube chat this evening, Jeremy and some regulars. But a lot to get to today. Right now, Toledo's on an offensive explosion. Akil Badu is trying to get back on track. Talk about Erie tonight, too. Erie is also on an offensive 13 runs, Chris. Is that still holding up right now?
Yeah, I was looking. I thought, yeah. West Michigan and Erie both had, looks like Toledo only had two runs.
Oh, okay. I thought, because I saw that the Mudhens had the bases loaded just recently.
I mean, Erie was weird. Erie and West Michigan both went down like 3-0, I think. And then suddenly it was like 3-3, 5-3, 8-3. It's like, oh, man. But, when the Tigers aren't playing, it's a good time to tune in to see what those minor league teams are doing.
Yeah, and they're up to a lot. And speaking of the minors, by the way, just as a reminder, Sunday, July 17th is our draft show coming up at 7 o'clock. It'll be at 7 o'clock at the Woodward Studios, main studios. Plenty of guests. We're going to have Trevor Huth from Bless You Boys, Brandon Day of Bless You Boys, and more. So, yeah, Erie's up 13-9 as we got updated there. So, yeah. Plenty of content going on out there, so go to woodwardsports.com for more details or go to our Twitter page at Woodward Tigers, and we have it, I have it pinned on mine at Rajcast Baseball, and you can get some more details on that. But yeah, so Tiger news in terms of the road trip, they went 3-5, picked up a big series, well, I don't say big series, when they picked up a series, they ended the two-game series split with the Giants, winning yesterday, and Austin Meadows on the IL again, with this time an Achilles issue. So there is kind of a can't buy a bucket kind of thing. And Isaac Pretty's hit another home run today, right? Is that right?
Did he?
Is that true?
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Well, there's this in the Slack channel, in the Woodward channel, there's just this overwhelming feeling, the same thing as fans, is that the Tigers have lost a trade. And I just want to give it another year before we kind of write it off. But either way, some of the numbers, we'll go into that a little later. But as far as that goes, the other thing that was coming up on this trip that was noticeable on the trip was the performance of Jonathan Schoop. And I have to give props to Jeremy Backham on Twitter. A team with runners in scoring position, over 549 plate appearances and 84 WRC plus, third worst. The team without Willie Castro or Jonathan Schoop with runners in scoring position. 450 plate appearances and 134 WRC plus. Best in baseball. Best in baseball. And this is without Willie Castro or Jonathan Schoop with runners in scoring position. And 18% of plate appearances with runners in scoring position have been wasted and dragged the entire team down, as Jerry had said. I thought it was a fascinating stat to throw it off the show. So, gentlemen, how are you guys doing? First and foremost, does that stat disgust you?
It doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah.
Like, I, because everybody on this team sucks.
Show's over. That's the show.
Like if you go, it was going to be my inside the numbers. I was going to pull out my annual primer on the stat RE24 to point out that Jonathan Schoop has the worst RE24 in baseball. But yeah, I just thought I found a different stat that I thought was more interesting. But But you know, you like Torkelson is one of the worst hitters in baseball. Candelario has been one of the worst hitters in baseball. Grossman has been one of the worst hitters in baseball. I find it hard to believe that somehow the Tigers are good with runners in scoring position when it's not Scope and Willie Castro. Not that I don't mean to like, you know, right. I didn't look into the stat. Certainly Scope has been awful with runners in scoring position. As I said, he's got the worst RA24 in baseball. It means basically he's been 19 runs worse than average. For his production has led to 19 fewer runs than would be expected. Of course, he's also been the best defender in baseball by like six runs or six outs, according to StatCast. So I don't know. I think you called it a throwback player, Raj. He's like an old, was it Roy Oyler?
Yeah, Roy Oyler or Eddie Brickman.
Somebody who just all glove, no bat. But
I'll tell you, that play he made yesterday late in the game when he went far to his left, went well out into the grass, and made a kind of a spinning throw. That was a thing of beauty. It really was, you know. And he's made a lot of nice plays. You have to give it to him. But I think, you know, last year we kind of had this, you know, to give ourselves a pat on the back. I mean, we certainly saw that a real large amount of his production came in 1 5-week heater. And there was a lot of blah other than that. And we're seeing it again this year.
Yeah, and there was today I was asked on Big D Energy about that, about the extension for Jonathan Scope. I thought that was fine because they don't have anybody in the system. They don't. And well, you can argue that Cody Clemens till the cows come home, but the Tigers weren't going to roll out two rookies on opening day. If you think about it, if they didn't re-sign Scope or give him an extension, it would have been Torkelson and Clemens on the right side. And that, I don't know if that would sit well with a lot of fans because we'd have two rookies out there. So, but I don't know, like, and Walter makes a suggestion in her YouTube channel that maybe someone will take him as a late inning guy. I mean, the White Sox still need a second baseman. Josh Harrison has not worked out for him. So who knows what they might do? Because, I mean, I think La Russa would rather go with a veteran bat. But again, I don't really talk about trade possibilities because, quite frankly, that's just a pie in the sky. Oh, they'll give us a good prospect. No, they won't. They know full well that the Tigers would be desperate enough to drop him off like that. So, but yeah, I thought it was an interesting stat to start the podcast. But as far as the road trip goes, the Tigers, and Chris brought this up, a really good stat that they've outhit their opponents, I think, at 9 out of 12 games, something to that effect.
Yeah, I think we figured what, the 3 out of 4 against Texas,
right?
2 against Boston, 2 against Arizona, and they outhit the Giants in both those games. Or just one of them?
I think it was just one of them.
But, yeah, it you know, you don't win with hits unless you change to my modified Stableford scoring system. But but it's a sign, right? Or not a sign. It's a start is what I should say. Theoretically. Hopefully it's a start. Like because before, you know, and if you look at the last two weeks, Tigers offense, they're middle of the pack in baseball, rather than dead last where they've been all year. So is that the Riley Green effect? I'd like to think a little bit of it is that he's definitely lengthening the lineup in ways that other people weren't, hitting the ball the other way, walking, doing some good things. But it could just be a coincidence. Javi Baez was heating up as well too. I mean, that's a huge, huge part of the offense. So I don't know. It's unfortunately as we could have predicted, any pessimistic Tigers fan could have predicted, it seems to have coincided with Tarek Skubal kind of falling down a couple rungs and the bullpen struggling. So it's like, you know, why have multiple things going well at the same time?
Well, I mean, a comment in the YouTube chat, he's right. You know, he's right. The Tigers are at 500. Since Riley
over Green's the last,
since Riley Green's
over the last 2 weeks?
Yeah. The Riley Green effect. I never thought I would say this in a million years, that one player could have that much of an effect, especially on this organization. But it is clear without him in the lineup, I just kind of, you always have the big what if, and you know, it's one thing or another, as somebody indicated in the chat. But Anyway, I don't know. Do you have any thoughts about the series overall in Arizona? Some of the at-bats that Scope had were pretty terrible, and I thought the same thing with Torkelson. That just some of them just didn't – he looked a little lost at the plate. But do you have any thoughts about the road trip before we move on?
Well, you know, I just think there are some signs that the offense is playing better, and that is kind of handy. Hopefully they keep moving in that direction. I really am – you know, not to, I don't care about the effect he's having on the lineup because we can debate that. I'm not sure we have a big enough sample to know. But I do like watching the Riley Green at-bats in a vacuum, just him. Not, you know, not worrying how it affects everybody else. You can really see that it appears he has a plan. It appears that, you know, he has the patience to be a good hitter. And I think as he gets a little older here, some of that power is going to really come. But it's been very fun to watch for the last couple weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The only thing I was going to say is, yeah, that's basically the only thing we haven't seen yet. And we've seen he's hit the ball hard a couple of times. He already has as many balls hit over 108 miles per hour as everybody on the team but Scope, Baez, and Torkelson. They have three or five or seven or whatever, and Green has two. But we saw this when he was on the rehab assignment. He's not quite lifting the ball yet. And I think he will eventually. He'll probably get into a groove and start crushing a few balls. But, I mean, what you see, and unfortunately, like, we always make the comparison to Torkelson because they were both, you know, top five prospects. They're coming up at the same time, all that stuff. What you saw twice against Carlos Rodon, you know, one of the toughest lefties in baseball, right? Throwing 96-97. Green worked long at bats and then took those pitches on the outside and hit them hard the other way for base hits, one for a single, one for a double. And it just, that's the sign of a very good hitter. He can hit the ball hard in any direction, no matter where you pitch it. And that's just what we haven't seen from Torkelson. We've seen Torkelson kind of just needs the ball to be an exact perfect spot for him to hit it hard. And for some reason, that exact perfect spot is not right down the middle, and nobody can quite figure that out.
Yeah, that's such a strange stat where you see the chart and you see that in the red, how many pitchers he misses in the upper quadrant. And it's like something I've never seen before.
It's time for Rogelio and Chris to go inside the numbers.
Fire! All right, it's time for Inside the Numbers. Uper, what is your Inside the Number?
Well, we touched on it already. I was going to bring up the Schwarber thing. I was going to go with 12 and 13 or 12 and 12, whatever you want to call it. But it is interesting that a player like Schwarber, who admittedly plays in a pretty nice home run park and has nothing but all or nothing uppercut swing for the most part, has tied the team in home runs over the course of a month. It really kind of just shows, you know, what the Tigers lack. They don't have the one big scary bat anywhere in their lineup at the moment. Until Riley Green group grows into that. You know, I wrote a little bit yesterday. The team just doesn't have an identity. You know, they really don't. I mean, you know, are they a power hitting team? No. Are they, you know, a running team? No. Do they have dominant starting pitching? Well, not anymore. They never really did. They hope to, but they don't. The bullpen. Okay, now maybe they could have hung their hat on the bullpen, but now the bullpen's starting to leak a little bit of oil. So it's really just it's just falling into hard times that we just hoped were beyond. They were beyond it, and then they're not.
What about you, Chris? What's your Inside the Number?
So I mentioned I was going to do the RE24, but I found this one when I was perusing Fangraphs today. My Inside the Number is 10.71. That is the ground ball to fly ball ratio for Yankees reliever Clay Holmes. Just more simply put, he gets nearly 11 ground balls for each fly ball he allows.
Wow.
And I looked, the second highest in baseball this year is Neil, don't call me Andre Pallante. I don't know why when he changed his name. 3.80 is the second highest. And then it's Manuel Class A at 3.2. So there's only one pitcher in baseball that is even within one third of Clay Holmes. His ground ball rate this year is 82.4%.
Wow.
Which is the highest ground ball rate ever since they started tracking this stuff, which was around 2000. The only other season at 80% was exactly 80% by Zach Britton in 2016. So the Yankees have themselves the biggest ground ball pitcher of all time, apparently. And I just thought
Is he a sinker, I'm assuming?
I think he does throw. Yeah, he does throw a hard sinker. But he was the dude that they got from the Pirates, right? It was a classic, like, hey, get him off the Pirates and we'll fix him. And they got him for, it was in that deal with Ransy Contreras, I think, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
The infielder Diego Castillo that I think you saw maybe when you went out to Erie last year. But yeah, they switched him up and he's been absolutely dominant. I think they said he broke Mariano Rivera's record for consecutive scoreless innings, consecutive hitless innings or something like that. So, you know, just but I had no idea he was such a ground ball monster until I saw that.
Wow.
It's impressive. So my inside number, I have two numbers. That is the number for 6.91 and 4.15. And that is, the 6.91 is the K per nine of Bo Brisky in the month of June. And 4.15 is FIP. Because FIP matters. Thank you. And some jackass on Twitter wanted to argue with me about, oh, FIP doesn't matter. It's ERA for relievers. Get the fuck out of here. Sorry. I no, seriously, that guy pissed me off. I got a stupid troll. Anyway, but the reason why I mentioned that is because they are, in terms of, like, you talk about, and the other, I'm adding a third number, it's 3.84. That's a FIP of Tarek Skubal because his ERA is at 5.85, but his FIP is at 3.84. So the reason why I'm mentioning those numbers is because the Tigers starting staff this month is 6-11. They have not had a good month. This has not been a good month for the starters. You can see the injuries kind of taking a toll a little bit, but it is good to see. If you would have told me that Bo Brisky in the month of June will be holding up the Tigers rotation, if you told me last year that Bo Brisky would be a key part of this rotation now, I would have said you're high. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, don't get me wrong. We saw him last year at the same time. He was just about to get called up to Erie. We're having a good season. But, again, it would have to be a set of circumstances where something happened to Matt Manning, ding. Casey Mize, ding.
Eduardo?
Roland Rodriguez, ding. So everything that, you know, like the most, oh, that can happen. Blah, blah, blah. And you know what? And Walter on the YouTube chat brings up a good point. Ronnie Garcia pitched really well yesterday. He pitched exceptionally well. He's not going to get a guy that goes deep. Five innings is what you get from him. But against the Giants yesterday, I thought he did a really good job of keeping them off balance. And he's been a good sub starter. But overall, the Tigers staff in the month of June has not been well. And so I think that might play into what's going on. I mean, the All-Star break is coming probably at the right time for the Tigers starting staff. But they have a couple weeks. I mean, they have the Royals. They're coming into town, and that's great and all. But just a hint of what's going on later for the good, the bad, and ugly. The Guardians' offense ain't much better than Detroit. So trust me, folks. That if you look at them, looking how the Guardians got in the first place, yeah, we'll look at it a little later. But either way, that is my inside number for this week. So I don't know if you guys want to add anything about the rotation, but that, I don't know, again, Bo Brisky has pitched above and beyond what.
Yeah, I think you touched on it. I mean, like, given what this rotation has lost, basically everybody, including their fifth starter, you know, they've had to replace four full-time starters. And, you know, Skubal hit a roadblock. Fieto hasn't been as good the last couple outings, but they're surviving for the most part. I mean, you said Brisky and Garcia has been great as a starter. I mean, great, relatively speaking, right? He's not going to be. I think he fits best. It's kind of a Tyler Alexander season from last year. Like he's doing really well in this role, or a Zach Minor throwback to like 2006 or whatever. 2000.
That's a good one.
He's doing really well in this role, but I think he's best as a long reliever. And the one stat, and I think they mentioned this on the broadcast, one of the broadcasts that stands out with him, is he is much, much worse. Once batters start getting on base against him, let's see how the stats right here. So,
I think they're batting over like 300 with him or something like that. I was looking that up earlier.
Yeah, let's see. Base is empty. Batters are hitting 176 against him. Men on base, 293. And men in scoring position, 233. So something about, you know, pitching from the stretch, I guess, I don't know. Like I said, yeah, it's been impressive to see what he's done. And we know the Tigers have pretty good pitching coaches. Yes. They're doing a lot with some questionable talent. But so thanks for Pete.
No, I would tell you, I put a tweet out about Garcia yesterday. And you know, I thought it was time to just acknowledge the fact that he has held up. It's been impressive. I would never, you know, if you had told me what is, you know, asked me after a handful of starts, what his ERA is going to be, I would have easily just said, you know, 6.5, you know, without even thinking about it. But for a Rule 5 guy who's just kind of hung around, they've definitely worked with him enough to get him to the point where at least he's competitive, you know. And you brought up Zach Minor. I was thinking Chad Durbin, but same
thing. Oh, that's a name I haven't heard in a long time.
Or, you know, I mean, we see guys like this kind of, you know, it happens fairly frequently. Even Drew Hutchinson has done a little bit of something like this. But, yeah, it, or even like, you know, Urania before he got hurt last year was pretty good for a long stretch. Sometimes these guys step up for you, and it's nice. You just don't expect it to last very long. Yeah, like I would have thought Garcia's numbers would look like Elvin Rodriguez's numbers, right? Like yeah. A couple 10-run outings, like, ooh, all right, this isn't working. But, yeah, you got to give them credit. You know, there's a little tiny MVPs all over this roster for a team that isn't very good. They've kind of, you know, stepped up in a big way.
How much do you guys see Brisky pitching this year? I mean, how many starts can they really put on his arm before they have to go to like a 6-man rotation or something?
Well, let's see. What did he throw last year? I'm looking right now because, you know, it was only a 5-month minor league season last year. And he did, I want to say he made 18 starts last year. Let's see. 2021, he made 21 starts, 106 innings. So I would guess that he'd get.
I say 125.
130, yeah, in that range, 125, 130. He's at 63 right now.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think that he'd probably get – he's at 12 starts, 63 innings. They may – what I would expect is kind of what we saw them. I think they did it briefly with Scuba last year and even Mize too, right? They started only letting them have like three innings. They'd have them start every fifth or sixth day, but it was only three innings, something like that. Sure. I think we can see that. And probably we'll see that in August. Because the Tigers will not be competing. And you know, barring an absolute miracle here, they're going to be out of it. So they're going to be able to kind of keep these guys on schedule, keep them pitching regularly, monitor their innings, and maybe get some other interesting arms in there that they want to see.
Yeah, I was going to say that's really going to be the ticket for Garrett Hill and maybe even Olsen.
Yeah, I was just going to say that probably would bridge that. Or if they pick up a pitcher at the trade deadline, like somebody who is – you know, a 4A pitcher that has made a couple cups of coffee, which I could see that happening, like somebody that can eat up starts, because Joey Wentz is still, as far as I know, is Wentz still out? Like, I haven't seen anything about him.
Yeah, no, Wentz, they just put him on the Toledo IL, like, a week ago. I don't know what he was doing in the meantime.
Hanging out, having a cup of coffee? I don't know what he was doing, but... No, the reason
his injury was what wasn't his injury basically a separated shoulder or something like that? Was it?
Yeah, it was like it wasn't anything ligament related as far as I know, outside of just that, or excuse me, like anything deeper than that. I don't know. It's been very hush hush about it. So,
and we haven't heard anything about Manning lately either, have we?
Nope, and we're not going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's so, it sure is the longest. Like your river, it was like he's just not feeling quite right. Oh. He'll be back next start, maybe. No, IL. Yeah, I mean, it's been.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you know, the best conspiracy theory going right now is that the Tigers have terrible doctors, and that's why they didn't. And the Rays have amazing doctors, and so the Rays were able to tell that Austin Meadows was going to get vertigo and COVID and bad Achilles, and so they were able to trade him at just the right time.
Why do we have a fat trainer? The fat trainer's making the team worse because he's fat. Get the come on, people.
Tyler Madison is now on the Lincoln Flying Tigers.
Really?
Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking right here.
I hope he gets to West Michigan soon.
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll see. Yeah, Wentz. The Mudhens put Wentz on the IL on June 21st. So that was like 2 weeks after he got hurt. I think so. I don't know exactly what – I don't know how the roster machinations work, but anyway.
But you know what's interesting enough that the Tigers right now after – it's funny is for how bad Oakland is, because Oakland's not that – Oakland has the worst record in the American League. Oakland has a slight advantage in terms of ISO, at 117. But here's how bad the ISO is between the two teams in the month of June for the Tigers and A's. Tigers are dead last at 111. A's are at 117. The next closest team after that is Arizona at 144. And it's 146. It's like a pack of like mid 140s. So it's that. I mean, and then you look at a team like Toronto's had four. This is how stacked the upper teams are in terms of baseball in the month of June. Guess how many? Okay, so I'm gonna without looking, how many home runs do you think the Yankees have, Chris?
In the month of June?
Yeah.
I actually looked at it earlier. I thought it was 48.
You said 48? Mm-hmm. Nope. Uber, what's your guess?
I was going to say 39.
57 is your answer. 57.
Two a game.
Yeah. So, all right. Then I'll ask you guys for Atlanta. How many home runs do you think Atlanta has in the month of June? Uber. Anybody in the chat wants to participate too without looking it up?
46.
I'm going to get that no matter what. Like, I don't know, 50, somewhere between 51 and 10.
How about that?
All right. Yeah, that you know what? Because you said 51. That was close enough. It was 52.
All right.
One more, because this is fun. This is fun for me. Because these are the only three teams that have ice over 200. Mm-hmm. How many home runs do you think Toronto has, Chris?
46.
Nailed it.
Oh. You were close. You're close.
48.
Oh, nice.
How about that?
Wow. You get the most prizes.
Yeah, you're cool close. By the way, the last one is really off topic real quick. Last night we were watching Price is Right, the 50th anniversary at primetime. Mm-hmm. The guy's bid, the actual retail price, or the bid was $33,000. Actual retail price was like $61,000.
Oh, my God.
But then the second person went over by $20,000. So the guy won by total fluke. It was hilarious because the guy's face is just like, I can't believe I just got away with it. So, anyway, non sequitur, but I just thought it was funny because we're talking about prices right just now. And yeah, so anyway.
No,
but yeah,
Mark, you know,
go ahead, you, Chris.
One of the, like, I have this strange baseball fantasy of doing a little trivia thing where basically people ask me, you know, you pick a good team and look at the best players on that team and ask me where the team got that player. Just as an example of how other teams seem to get good players everywhere rather than just at the top of the draft or in free agency. But,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that would be a cool game.
Be fun.
I like that. I like that idea. I like the audience to participate and ask us trivia questions. Cause I love trivia. I absolutely love trivia.
Like to me, the prime example this year would be Houston, right? So, Jeremy Pena, you know, better than Carlos Correa. He's a rookie, at least in terms of performance this year. He was the third rounder, I think. They've got Framber Valdez and Garcia. Those guys were both paid $15,000 in the international market. Like, it's ridiculous. They've got all these good players from all over the place. And the Tigers have some free agents and some top draft picks, and that's it. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, let's move on. So, yeah, it's definitely time to move on. All right, it is time for the good, the bad, and the ugly. And who do I start with inside numbers? Youper? Okay, so Chris, you start with the good, the bad, and the ugly this week.
So my good is Cade Horton. I'm kind of in MLB draft mode right now because it's coming up pretty soon. And I think Cade Horton's kind of the coolest story in this year's draft. There are always good stories, But Cade Horton, people might even remember him. He was a high-ranked draft prospect in 2020, so the year the Tigers got Trenton Torkelson and Daniel Cabrera, Dylan Dingler, and Cole Keith and Craig Cruz. And he was But he was one of those classic cases where people knew he was probably just going to go to school because he was a two-way player and he also wanted to try play football for Oklahoma. He was like a shortstop, probably to move to third base in the pitcher. And then he came out as a freshman and blew out his arm. So he didn't pitch at all in 2021. And he came back this year, and he spent the first 6 weeks of the year exclusively hitting, basically playing third base, hitting okay. And then he moved to the mound in like, you know, late March. And it didn't go great at all. His first six outings, I think he had a first nine games. He had an ERA almost at nine. He wasn't working long. And then apparently there's a great story about it in The Athletic. He was trying to improve, or was trying to start throwing a cutter. And he accidentally found a filthy slider while trying to learn the cutter. And he just absolutely took off. So in the last five outings, he pitched against Texas, Florida, Virginia Tech, Notre Dame, and Ole Miss. Basically, you know, helping Oklahoma get to the College World Series finals. He did I posted a 2.61 ERA, 20 hits, 6 walks, and 49 strikeouts in 31 innings. And he was sitting 94, 96, up to 98, nasty slider. And he struck out 13 in the final college baseball game of the year, setting a new College World Series final record. This dude who was barely pitching at all like 3 months ago. And, yeah, back then he probably wouldn't have been drafted, or if he got drafted, it would have been in like the 11th round as like an arm strength bet where you give him a couple extra $100,000. Yep. And there's a chance he might be the first college pitcher taken now. He probably won't be, but he may go in the first round. And it's an amazing – it's kind of like a more drastic version of what Alex Fiedo did after the Tigers drafted him back in the College World Series in 2017. He just absolutely took off at the right time. And it's something that you know, because they moved the draft back, he's probably going to make millions of dollars now. So that's kind of cool. And he's actually drafted as a real sophomore, so he could have – he probably would have gone back to school if he didn't do this, but now he's going to get who knows how much money. So that's my good. My bad, and I don't think this is going to make anybody weep, is the Minnesota Twins bullpen this year, which is they just blew three consecutive games against the Guardians. Let's see, what did they do? On Tuesday, they gave up two runs in the eighth to lose. On Wednesday, four runs in the 10th to lose. And today, two in the eighth and two in the ninth to lose. They are ranked 29th in reliever war this year, ahead of only the Reds. And they're tied for the fifth worst in terms of giving up home runs, which is, of course, death to a bullpen. And it's interesting because, like, Sean Duran and Griffin Jackson both been legitimately good this year, but a bunch of their, you know, older veteran arms have been really bad. So, it's like, Gerald Cotton was not been good. Pagan been really bad. Joe Smith, the old, you know, pitching around for 40 years now, he's bad. And so they could probably use, unless if they really want to win the AL Central this year. And ordinarily, of course, you don't want to trade within the division, right? But Fulmer's contract is ending anyway, and you know, if they can get something good out of Minnesota, I say go for it. But it's been bad so far. Yeah. Jeremy said Pick from Discord, loving that. Yeah, I'm sure. Pick, of course, hates the Twins and not everything about them.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah.
And so, and my ugly is Steven Strasburg, which, you know, this actually happened like a couple weeks ago. I don't know if anybody else mentioned it. I forgot to mention it, but, you know, he, again, the draft season had me kind of thinking about Strasburg, who was arguably the greatest draft prospect of all time. And probably had the greatest baseball debut ever.
Yeah.
Maybe one of the best sports debuts ever after all that hype comes out and strikes out, 14 in his debut, I think. Just absolutely electric. And then he was just kind of okay for the rest of his. I shouldn't say that. I mean, he's been an above average pitcher, three-time All-Star, had a couple of really good seasons and won the college, the World Series MVP and deserved it. He was great in 2019.
Yep.
But you know, it's just kind of funny, you know, that for somebody who was so hyped in such a you know, huge draft prospect, it almost feels like a failure that he's only like a 32 win pitcher, like 32 war, which would be a great outcome for anybody, but it feels a little bit shy. And of course, after that 2019 season, the Nationals signed him to a monster contract. What was it? 7 years, $245 million.
Yep.
And since then, he's basically been Franklin Perez for them. He threw five innings in 2020 and then had carpal tunnel syndrome. Right. And then last year it was 20 innings and he had a sore shoulder and a sore neck and then had to get the dreaded thoracic outlet surgery, which is just a killer, you know. Oof. And he came back. He was 2 weeks ago. Came back through four and one third innings in his lone outing, 4 2-thirds innings, and then hit the injured list again with a stress reaction in his ribs. But the ugliest thing to me about that is in that outing, his fastball averaged 90.3 miles an hour, which 4 miles an hour below what he did in 2019. That's and if people remember, that's kind of like what happened with Jeremy Bonderman when he came back from the outlet. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah.
And he was always a 93 to 96 guy with that slider, came back, and it was like 89, 90. And no matter what he did, he couldn't throw any harder. And it just, I don't know, it's just a bummer because Strasburg, when he was on, was as dominant as anybody. It just, we never got to see it much, and it's hard to picture him ever getting back to that.
You know, and it's funny because I look at that, like the same thing with Chris Archer. Chris Archer's never going to be the same like he was after that surgery. It took him almost, 3 years before he became serviceable right now with the Twins, if that. So that's a kind of a dangerous precedent to set, which is why, big contracts for pitchers never seem to work out. On the other hand, though, congratulations to Mark Appel, the first pick who got called up. So I wanted to mention that real quick before we moved on. And we do have a fan, good and bad and the ugly. So thank you, Steve nice. Butts. For listening to directions and submitting a good and bad and ugly. I've been asking our listeners. We have really good core listeners to ask. They do a great job of questions. But now with the segments, I like hearing from other segments besides yourself. If people want to hear from us, just talk about it, great. That's fine. But every once in a while, when I ask you to do something as simple as the good, the bad, the ugly, or give me a number, please. That's cool. You know, it's cool. It just I want to know some more. We have really intelligent listeners. And we have Mark who submitted Twitter questions again through DM, and we have a regular basis thing, so I like that. So we have Jeremy in the chat who I love interacting with. I love interacting with people, period. Don't worry about it, Jeremy. I put it on Twitter, and sometimes I forget that not everybody's on Twitter. Anyway, I digress. So you know what? Let's do Steve's real quick and we'll go to yours.
Let's do it.
The good is Ohtani for two-way player, and this is second week in a row, by the way. Second week in a row that Steve or Ohtani's been on the good and the bad, the ugly, my radio voice there. For a two-way player to have a month of June that he has had, how are the Halos so terrible? That's a very good question. The bad is seeing that the Tigers have three of the ten worst OPSs in baseball in their everyday lineup. And he refers to the Candelario, Scope, and Grossman. And then hopefully none of these three return to the 2023 active roster. The ugly, Phil Nevin telegraphing the Halos' retaliatory pitch by having an open starter slowly throw a ball at the Mariners and instigate a bench clearing ball. Brawl. Is AJ Hinch a potential trade deadline like chip? We'll talk about that a little later. Yeah, Phil Nevin, look, there's somebody posted how many games he's managed, how many games he's been suspended. And it does sound like a Phil Nevin thing to do. You look at the Yankees last year, look at the bench, how many times Phil Nevin chirped. He is as old school as they come.
Yep.
Hey, so, all right, without further ado, what's up?
They made that pitching change late, too, right? I mean,
yeah.
Just before game time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my gosh, I mean, might as well take out a billboard.
Yeah. I won't let it go. All right, Uper, what's yours?
All right, my good. I actually have two quick things, and we won't spend much time on either one. The news today in the Big Ten with UCLA and USC coming in, everybody talks football and everybody talks about basketball, and that's totally fine. We know where college baseball is in the pecking order in our sports world. But I thought those two teams, assuming all sports are coming in, and I guess I haven't heard that for sure, but I'm assuming they are.
Yeah, that was officially announced that Big Ten.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, to bring in UCLA's program into the Big Ten, I mean, they're always highly competitive. USC is periodically very competitive. I think that, it could be an interesting addition to the Big Ten baseball and the quality of play. I'm just going to be interested to see what it does for UCLA's recruiting. They have, knowing they're going to be going to play in Bloomington, Indiana, and places like that.
I don't think so. I'm going back to Cali.
There you go. I like it.
I
Oh, yeah, oh. You know, I've got wishful thinking for that too. That might help the Big Ten baseball, but the general consensus seems to be that this is just going to really hurt UCLA and USC baseball, and SEC, and is basically going to go into California and get all the players they want now, which they're kind of already doing. LSU continues to go out and get whoever they want.
Yeah.
Yes, I've seen the exact same thing. Obviously, it's great for the Big Ten, but maybe not so good for the others. So we'll see how it goes. My other thing was the Manfred interview. There was some good and bad and some ugly in that thing. But the one I liked the most was it sounds like the pitch clock is coming next year. I've pretty much gone full. I've turned all the way toward liking the pitch clock. I think it's a win. I think get the game moving would be great. I really liked the little aspect of the article where they said they put owners in a room and they had two games going simultaneously, a minor league game and a big league game, and jaws were on the floor by how much faster pitchers were getting motion, you know, versus the 14 seconds of a minor league game and the 24 seconds between pitches in a big league game. And I think if we get a chance to see that next year, we'll love it too. I really do. My bad, just kind of for the game in general, it's always better when the superstars are doing it. To see Bryce Harper get hit by a pitch, real bummer. Having another MVP caliber year, whether he's going to get it or not, who knows, but certainly he could have made a run at a third MVP for himself. Gets a pitch from Blake Snell, and those are always seem like the cheapest injuries to me. It's just a bummer. You just get clipped by a pitch and now you're done for 2 months. My other guy is Acuna, Ronald Acuna Jr. Last year, I don't know if you guys remember, when he was on a roll, in my mind, I was watching a lot of Braves baseball. To me, he's the next coming of Willie Mays. Now, I don't know. He could be the next coming of Eric Davis. He missed his last year with the ACL. This year, he's getting hurt every 5 minutes. I mean, and this is not just a fantasy. I have him on a fantasy team, but that's why I noticed this thing. Every day, I look at the thing, and it's like, oh, there's injury notice. He's got a bad back. He's got a bad hammy. He's only got 165 plate appearances so far this year. He's still productive, but he's not on the field. So MLB, you know, need to hit the stars out there. I don't know what to do about it, but this is just one of those years coming off the lockout. Just, man, everybody's hurt. And then ugly is Austin Meadows. You know, I've been watching this game a long time, over 40 years. I don't recall anybody having two Achilles tendon problem at the same time. You know, I suppose it's happened, but that one just seemed like, where did that come from? That came out of nowhere. So just so you know that we track down information wherever we can get it. I was talking to my son's physical therapist yesterday. So I said, have you ever seen this? And he told me, yeah, I actually have. He said, you know those boxes, I forget the name of it now, you know the boxes that you jump up on?
Yeah.
What are the plyometric jumps or whatever? Mm-hmm. He's wondering if he was doing that because he had a guy pull or strain both Achilles doing that. So that's my theory.
I like that theory. Yeah, although hopefully you don't get yelled at about it this time.
Bring it. Just bring it. By the way, it's all good.
My theory was that he got out of bed and somebody was hiding under his bed and grabbed his ankle as he tried to jump up and stretch.
Like Pet Cemetery style, where he gets
a little monster, you have a little gate under the bed.
Yeah, but I, you know what, I have an actual image of how when MLB was watching the minor league game and the regular game at the same time. It's crazy. This is exactly what it looked like. In there.
Ludwig van.
I like it.
What? I have to watch a low A game.
See, you know, Jeremy in the comments says he thinks that it should be 25 to 35 seconds, and I think he also, I don't know if he was the one in the Discord that said, like, he doesn't, but somebody doesn't like the pitch clock because it barely gives him enough time to drink a bunch of beer at the games, which I understand. That's right. There's a certain part of baseball that I think people want a leisurely pace and to be able to hang out and, you know, goof around with their buddies and talk smack. I will say, though, and maybe the fans do want longer games, but I know just about anybody who works at baseball, be they players, broadcasters, writers, media, I haven't heard anybody complain about the pitch clock. I think And we talked about it many times. We saw a game with all sorts of scoring and hits and pitching changes, and it was over just over 2 hours. You know, I think that the golden mean is probably about 2.5 hours, maybe 2:45. Between 2 and 2:45, I don't think you want games any longer than that.
You know what's funny? Yesterday or last Friday, we went to a really long game. Yesterday, my nephew's little league game was actually longer than the Tigers game. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. That game started at 6 o'clock. That game did not end till 9:15, almost 9:15. I'm not kidding.
They used to have limits on, like, I guess once you get like legit and competitive, there's not limits. But I remember limits being like, it's like 1:45 tops. If it so goes over that, that's the last inning.
When I played, because I played Catholic League, and Catholic League is 3 balls, 2 strikes. And that's why, because they games were ending close at night and they were on it for safety purposes. But no, I was blown away. I'm sitting there going, and there was like my nephew's team changed pitchers 5 times and they won 17-6. Jeez, so people, I understood why they were trying to watch innings and stuff like that. But anyway, I'm not gonna.
Some of that's on the umpire, the little league umpire. They got to get that. They got to get those kids moving, man.
No, you're absolutely right.
Get warmed up. Let's go.
Yeah, those guys were lethargic, Uper. I guarantee you, you could probably run circles on these guys because it's just like the energy from their. Like, yeah. I just remember even a couple calls. There was a couple calls where they're just like, "Safe, like, come on."
And when a game is taking that long. The strike zone becomes pretty generous.
Yes.
If that thing is airborne, it's a strike.
Yeah. if it doesn't bounce before the plate, it's a strike.
You bet.
No, and Jeremy's absolutely right. You're only allowed to pitch so many per inning. But what it was is once a team hits 5 runs, the inning's over. Which is nice. But for whatever reason, I don't know why it took so long. I couldn't believe it. My phone died at 1.2, and I was like, man. Anyway. All right, I digress. It is time for my version of the good, the bad, the ugly. And there was 2 stats I really wanted to look at, but I decided to go with the Atlanta Braves month starters in the month of June. And the reason why I'm going to slash this with somebody else too at the same time. Atlanta this month has had, in terms of this reason why it stood out, their K per nine is 10.63. The second closest, by the way, so if you're talking about in terms of what reason why it stands out is that they are the, as far as trying to get runaway, they're the only ones in double digits. The second closest is the Mets, a division opponent, 9.80, but it's their WAR. They have a 5.2 month. They had a WAR of 5.2 according to Fangraphs in the month of June. So they are building a case to run away and hide in a very competitive AL East division. So they have been able to – their home runs per 9.84. So that's good. That's really good. Yeah. And that helps you. And then the other one is – this is something that the Tigers have not had. They have that one positional player breakout at all as a – like having a really good month. And for being a bad team. But one player has stood out for the Reds in the month of June, and that's Brandon Drury, who is batting 347. He's got a WRC plus of 183. He has hit 8 home runs this month, 18 K rate of 18, walks around 5%, and he's slugging at 653. That, to me, the fact that I had a player just kind of had a month like of that kind of power, not even let alone domination, but you're getting this from the Reds, and that's just, it's sad the Tigers can't even get one player to do that. So, I thought I'd mention that.
Drury's a guy who's been available for multiple years now. He's kind of a mercenary at this point. That kind of reminds me of like Matt Tuiasosopo's first couple months with the Tigers or something like that, right? Didn't he have a pretty darn good first half? I don't remember what year that was, but
yeah. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He was. Remember how everybody wanted to put him in the lineup every day? And there's, that was one of the first Twitter arguments I've seen on. I remember
it. Maybe like 2011, 2010.
Yeah. I'm checking right now. Let's see. Tuiasosopo came up with the Mariners, right? Let's see. 2013 for the Tigers.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. Only 191 plate appearances, 7 home runs, 13% walk rate, hit 244. But I'm kind of curious how
Yeah, Walter. I think Walter said 2012, 2011. I think he's right about that.
For Tuiasepo?
Yeah.
It was 2013.
Hmm. Oh, let's went through that. Okay, all right.
So yeah, in July he hit four home runs that July. I don't know. He was hitting 321 in March or April, 308 in May, 412 in June, and then hit four home runs in July, and that was it for him. So anyway, just an out of nowhere offensive explosion. It would be nice. It would be nice to see that again.
The Tigers would be happy with Brandon Dixon.
Yeah. I know. John Hicks.
Yeah. The bad is Justin Turner, and he has not had a good month of June, and I'm going by at least 100 plate appearances here. He is batting .209 with a slugging percentage of .267, and his ISO is at .58. Ooh. And he has not had a home run this month. And the reason why I mention that is that the Dodgers right now, there's somebody that tweeted last week, I think it was Molly Knight, who said, "Oh, something about the Dodgers, something," and I'm not, I forgot, it's hard to watch this team sometimes to that effect. And everybody's like, "What? What are you talking about?" Maybe she's talking about Justin Turner. Maybe she's talking about his performance. I don't know. But I just had a big eye roll when I saw it. I'm like, come on. Really? Anyway. But yeah, Justin Turner is my bad. And the ugly is, to me, in some ways, this USC and UCLA thing. The reason why it's ugly is because it's the beginning of the end of all these conferences. I think that there's going to be like two or three major conferences, and that's it. Because they act with a quickness like this. So the pageantry of the Rose Bowl and all that stuff, that's gone. I mean, it was long gone a long time ago anyway. But it just continues. For anybody who's hardcore college, and normally I would put a baseball thing there. But the Angels Yankees brawl, or excuse me, the Angels and Seattle brawl. I know there's somebody dislocated their elbow for the Angels, which is just all that. In Iglesias doing that stupid thing where he threw out the shells, and I mean it's all. And Evan Woodbury, I'll give credit to Evan Woodbury on M Live. He tweeted us out like, "What's wrong with that being not funny or have some sort of entertainment value?" It was funny. It was just a bunch of guys going, "Bro, come on. It was just, yeah. And it's all entertainment. It's like wrestling. But the Big Ten, I understand that why this is being done. They just put money. Just put, we're going to, you know, like, that's it. Don't put it for, like, the athletes or some sort of bold crap about, like, this is part of the academic thing. Just say what it is. So
yeah, I think the Big Ten kind of threw the academic argument who's the rough, is it Nebraska is not really a great academic institution. Maybe Rutgers, I don't know. But
yeah. Rutgers actually has a really good reputation for being a good school.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, Big Ten likes to, cluck its nose and some of the finest academics and athletics at the same time. You're absolutely right. We're going to see two, possibly three mega conferences. We already saw this starting when Texas joined the SEC, right?
Yeah.
Texas A&M joined the SEC, Missouri, it's just going to, I kind of envision it being almost like the sports equivalent of Netflix. Netflix showed up and had all these great shows from all these different networks, and it was like, yeah, it's not going to work. And suddenly they're like, hey, it's working really well. So now everybody has their own streaming network, and now we're back to. So I picture in the future it'll be like, hey, the Big Ten Northeast and the Big Ten Southwest. Like they're going to have four different divisions within the Big Ten, and it's going to kind of be back to the way it was, but just under a different name. But yeah, it's. I mean, there's so much funny stuff about that. Somebody was just tweeting about somebody committed to UCLA or USC for baseball, and now they're going to have to come and play in East Lansing. In like late March, I wasn't planning this. I don't know. It's it'll be interesting to watch, but it is all about the money, and I don't know. Hopefully the players continue to get more of it because that's what drives the game. But I don't know. I have a feeling that those in power are just going to continue to find ways to make more money for themselves.
Also, don't call it the Big Ten. Call it something else.
What's the Big 16 now, right? And I think they've kind of the G kind of looks like a 16.
Yeah.
The BIG. So yeah, that's, you know, I don't know. It hasn't been the Big Ten since what? When did it become the Big 11? 1995?
Yeah.
Penn State.
Yeah.
Penn State. Yeah.
It's too much money to change the logo. You know, that's the reason why. And then but then I remember the biggest thing about the Big Ten is they always shoot themselves in the foot. The Legends and Leaders Division. What kind of that's such a condescending BS thing to say about yourselves. The Legends and Leaders.
Yeah, college sports is all about, like, you know.
Meanwhile, you go to Northwestern and your field looks like a high school field, the Ryan Field. Sorry, I didn't interrupt you, Chris, but
no, I just yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. It's big business.
By the way, though, you know what's been helping out with the Tigers not being good right now is they started the NBA free agency and I'm not trying to go totally off topic, but that James Harden was making $47 million a year.
Yeah,
good Lord.
The contracts in the NBA are nutso.
Yeah.
Like, and again, it's like they're worth it. These certain players are worth what they're like. LeBron James was making, I don't know, 47, 60, something like that. And his production and what he brings to the team is worth it. But it kind of gets out of whack compared to our, you know, what we expect from the top players in baseball. It's like, you know, between 30 and 40 tops now, right? And somebody like James Harden, who just kind of, you know, he fell apart this year after the trade. He's making $47 million.
Like, and Kevin Durant's like,
work if you can get it.
And then Kevin Durant's like, yeah, I'm out. And
that's right. We need more players demanding trades in baseball.
Yes.
I think we need more kind of divas in baseball in general. Like, I think of somebody like Gary Sheffield back in the day, just like being outspoken and saying what he likes and what he doesn't and wanting to get traded. And like, that's what makes the NBA and the NFL compelling all year round, when you've got these weird personalities who are jerks or, you know, misunderstood or whatever, people love to talk about them because you just don't see that in baseball. I don't know if it's the game or, you know, the old school mentality that's stifling people.
It would be great to hear what Mike Trout really thinks of that organization.
Yeah.
That'd be a lot of fun to hear. And it would be interesting to see him try to engineer himself into a better situation.
Milton Bradley, that's a name. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's a name I haven't heard in a long time. Good call there, Walter. Milton Bradley also was kind of had a volatile temper. That guy was pissed off all the time. Another one that comes to mind too is I totally forgot about David Winfield. I mean, he was getting stuff. People were spying in on his stuff. Remember that whole situation where Steinbrenner was actually having private investigators following him around and all that? That to me is like, or just.
Yeah, we could use another Steinbrenner too. Or like a Jerry Jones style owner who's just bonkers, and instead we get Dick Monfort,
Reggie Jackson,
or even like I remember when that it was funny, like the infamous Seinfeld joke about you traded Jay Buhner. He also traded Doug. This guy's also traded Ricky Henderson, and I mean I think that he traded Ricky Henderson, and he traded Doug Grayback, who was a big part of the Pirates run in the 90s for basically peanuts. I think Bobby Bonilla, too. I think Bobby Bonilla was never mind. He was in the White Sox. Forget it. Anyway. So, yeah. Or even, who's another? I feel like there was a player on the Indians that wanted, or I'm trying to think of the team in the 90s.
Bell?
Albert Bell. Good call. Yeah, Albert Bell was also a diva. So,
yeah.
We have to be low key. We can't make any waves. Get out of here. Come on. Say something. You know, like do something. I sound like a dick saying, "Oh, do something. Entertain me, muse me." Nothing like that at all. No, I just want some.
I think it
would get mad. Damn it.
Yeah.
That's all. All right. Anyway, do we have any questions today, Chris?
We did. Well, Steve sent us a question, and Deadly Ninja Bees gave us a 3-parter.
All right. You want to go with the Mark question first, or you want to go?
Oh, yeah, I didn't see the Mark one, so yeah, that's what you're gonna have to read.
So this one's so this is from Mark at 2435. A Tiger 2435 on Twitter. Riley Green is already third on the team with a 0.3 WAR and looks to be the most comfortable hitter on the team, drawing plenty of walks. Long term, this is a great question. Does he fit better batting second or fourth, since we've already seen him in both spots? Chris.
So, you know, I think I had a brief discussion with this on Twitter like a week or so ago. And traditionally speaking, they say that your three best hitters, like the old school method was like you put your best hitter third, right? And then fourth and fifth, and you put your speedy guys up top. But when they, you know, sabermetricians, Tom Tango and Mitchell Dickman, and they determined that you should probably have your best hitters batting second and fourth, and your third best hitter batting first, and then fifth, and then third, in that order. So, yeah, second, the difference between second and fourth, I would be inclined to say second for the early part of Riley Green's career, because I think eventually he'll you know, get close to 30 home run power. I don't know if we'll see it early on. I think he's going to be more of a line drive on base guy. And so what you want is you want him to be getting on base for theoretically for your run producers there in the third and fourth spot. And then you want him getting more plate appearances. If you bat second, you're probably going to get between like 30 and 50 more plate appearances per year than you will if you bat fourth.
What about you, Uper?
Yeah, I was going second all the way. I would rather get him to the plate once per game more. I think every spot in the batting order, if I'm correct, I think it's 18 times per season, roughly. As you go back in order. So, yeah, that'd be at least 36 extra plate appearances per year. And I think if he's your best hitter, and in time looks like there's a good chance he will be, I'll take those 36 extra plate appearances and see what he can do with it.
Yeah, same here. There's no reason. I mean, I like the idea of him batting cleanup, especially with the offense not having a spark. But if the Tigers can get at least – if Herrick Haas, who, by the way, had a pretty good month of June, batting 286 – and he shows some power. I think he gets somebody. I mean, I don't care who it is at the trade deadline that gives him. Even it could be empty power. It could be Kerry Carpenter. Yeah, I'm just joking about that, but either way, it could be somebody. Whoever it is that bats cleanup. But I agree with you guys. I love him having extra at bats. He's such a good, entertaining player to watch. And yeah, definitely. And Perry, we'll get to your question in a second. We'll save your question for a minute. You had a question on YouTube, so thanks for submitting it. We'll get to that in just a second. But yeah, that's where I think having the extra bats, and that just gives entertainment value too for fans at home. I mean, as simple as that sounds, let's call a spade a spade. This lineup outside of Miguel Cabrera has been frustrating to watch. And kind of sometimes you're like, you know what's going to happen. You know, you can predict that when Torkelson comes up in a situation, he's going to struggle. You know that Robbie Grossman is going to hit one fly ball to the left or shallow up or scope, whatever. But we don't know what Riley Green's going to do. And that's a good thing. I mean, like I said, when you have a ground out at 109 miles an hour, that's an out. That's still like something you can go, well, yeah, Helio, that was an out. That's a loud ass out, though. That's something to talk about. Versus, oh, it was an 89 mile an hour flare to left. You know, so. But the next question, real quick, and we got this in here, was from Perry. Do you think Candelario gets non-tendered? Uper.
I'm going to say no. I think he will be tendered. I think there's still enough goodwill from last year, and as long as he shows something here in the second half of the season, I would be shocked. I would be surprised if he's just jettisoned.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of play the fence here and say it depends on who the general manager is. I think we could see, if a new general manager were to come in, I think we could see in a whole lot of changes. And even if it's, you know, Avila getting bumped up and you know, Sartori or Minzen being the GM, I think the you know, they, things could be different. But I'm assuming there's going to be status quo because that's what, you know, Tigers fans are cursed to get. So I would say, given the Tigers' recent history of basically holding on to guys until they've exhausted all their trade value and, you know, gone downhill, I would say yes, they will probably bring him back. I don't know what he's due for. What is it, like $6-8 million? I think they probably will bring him back. I will say, like, it might be a bad sign if we start seeing Ryan Kreidler, if they add Ryan Kreidler to the 40-man and start seeing at-bats from him in, like, August or September. I think, like, we might go, hey, wait a minute. But that's, I don't know, that's something to keep an eye out for. But, yeah, I think, you know, we're talking about a guy who led the league in doubles last year, who had a couple of pretty darn good years. I think that they will probably hope that he can refine that, maybe get that kind of, you know, final year before free agency boost that we see so often, some from guys like, I don't know, Aaron Judge.
Yeah. I think he's going to, I think he might find his bat in the second half a little bit, as Perry suggested in YouTube. But I, again, your alternative is you can go with Kreidler, but again, it's not a for sure thing. There's going to be people want Candelario gone. If you look at Twitter all the time, but in reality, he does serve a purpose because there's no other choice. And I don't like saying that, but at some point you want to have an alternative like Colt Keefe, who, by the way, was mentioned on Baseball America's article today about up-and-coming minor leaguers. So who's him? And definitely worth checking out the read. So, Chris, what is our next question? We got one from Ninja Bees, right?
Yeah, his was a three-parter. First part was, given the Tigers' lack of hitting, does Eric Haas have more value than Tucker Barnhart? I don't know if you guys want to touch on that.
I would agree. I think he Haas is not bad at receiver either. I think he's shown ability to good catch a good game. So I think he does have, he presents a higher value than Tucker Barnhart.
If you just strictly, you know, when you compare it to what Haas is making versus what Barnhart's making, yeah, I could be okay with that statement too.
Value. Yeah, for me, I think, you know, basically we can't measure everything that the catchers do on the field. And I would assume that we got to give Barnhart some credit. We've talked about it at like a show a month ago or whatever. We have to give him some credit for how well the pitching has done, you know, overperform. But yeah, I mean, you're looking at, Barnhart is not grading out well as a defensive catcher. I think he's -4 defensive run saved. He's basically a slightly below average framer and he doesn't have a great arm. So like he's not doing a lot on defense and he's got a 47 WRC plus 47. You know, Haas is not grading out well on defense either, but he's got an 84 WRC plus, and he is, we were talking about earlier about their worst hitters with runners in scoring position. He's their best hitter with runners in scoring position this year, at least among hitters who's actually had a fair amount of plate appearances. And yeah, with that kind of power, I would like to see Haas play more. And when you remember last year, the Tigers got good last year, basically when it was addition by subtraction, right? They got rid of a bunch of guys who weren't good. And the only problem this year is that a bunch of the guys who aren't good, they can't really get rid of them. They could, but it's not as easy as it was last year. So, but they can kind of, you know, tip the scales and offer some more playing time to people who are performing. And I'd like to see Haas get some more ABs for sure. Second part of that question was Nob Manfred wants 32 teams. What do you guys want the divisions to look like?
Oof.
Good question.
Well, with 32 teams, I mean, obviously, either you're going to have four divisions with eight teams or eight divisions with four teams. And you got to assume they're not going to have fewer playoffs teams. So, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder if you're just better off with two 16-team leagues and seven playoff teams out of each one.
Isn't that how they do it?
When you do the four team divisions, if you do eight divisions of four teams, almost every year there's going to be at least one division where someone's going to win that sucker with 78 wins. I mean, that's just going to, you know, that's going to happen. And that's a problem. So I would rather see two leagues like they did back in the 60s and before, but just instead of one playoff team, 6 or 7.
I've gone back and forth about this, and I remember I forgot. I saw it last year, and I can't remember where I saw it, but I saw a lineup where the Tigers were in the division similar to what they saw in the AL East. And so I think it was Nashville, maybe Nashville was in the division too, if there was like an expansion team. I can't remember. But I'm in favor for having, because essentially it's heading this way right now. We're not going to play the you're not going to play the White Sox 19 times anymore. There's more, they're trying to balance it out a little bit and play everybody. So make it 2 divisions and then add maybe the playoffs to it. Because does anybody care if you win a, like, add something to, if you beat it, if you're in a division, the worry I have though is if you're going to create a mega division, 2 mega divisions per league, right? Then the more powerful teams, it's going to be what you saw back in the day, Uper, which guys, it's going to be first division, second division. Yeah. And that's it. And that does not bode well for a team like, let's say, the Tigers or the Royals or, I'm trying to think of another a smaller market team. The Pirates are essentially fodder. The Pirates have become the Yankees farm system. I mean, they make trades with them all the time. They've rated them quite a bit. So it's weird because then that used to be the role of the Kansas City A's. When the Athletics at Roger Maris, there was a couple pitchers. Don Larson came from Kansas City. It's history repeating itself in some ways. So if they do this kind of big division thing, you will see the smaller teams get smaller. If they do it like 3 divisions, then at least it's like, okay, well, the NL Central's there. They can compete for something. Fans feel invested in it. But realistically, it doesn't, like, on paper, it makes more sense to have 2 divisions. However, for morale boosts for fans, keep that, you know, division. So.
Yeah, I think I do want to see expansion. It's been a long time. I think they need. That would be a way to boost offense for one thing, because you're diluting the pitching a little bit. And I think they said it's been the longest period without expansion since expansion began. When was the last expansion?
97? 98, I thought. Yeah, but whatever. Yeah.
What I would kind of like to see would be the 4-8 team divisions and then adopt the minor league first half, second half sort of playoff races. To keep teams invested for the whole year, you bring up prospects in the second half, and suddenly you've got an exciting team. You might make the playoffs, even though you're under 500 or whatever. But I do think they would probably do 8-4 team divisions, because that would, I think the players would probably push for that, because that would theoretically increase the number of teams that could make the playoffs. You know, if you're in, yeah, like you said, you're in a team or a division where the winner's going to get like 78 games, but that means like the lowly Tigers, like, hey, we can go for it. We might win the division. I don't know if that would work in practice, but in that scenario, I would like to see the Tigers in a division with Cleveland, Chicago, and Toronto. I just feel like Toronto belongs as a rival with the Tigers. It's based on the way that the fans invade America, and I just think it would be a really great rivalry again in time. And probably not that long it wouldn't take for them to be a great rivalry. And it would be nice to see, to me. And I think geographically it makes some sense. I think to do that, they would probably end up, you know, the 8 divisions. We would see some we'd probably see some more teams switching leagues again. But that doesn't really matter anymore, right?
With
the,
you know, right.
Yeah, you know, so.
Yeah, no longer the days of the Cardinals and Cubs rivalries. No one cares.
Yeah.
So, next question.
His final one was, the Tigers appear to be hitting better. What are they not doing in the offseason that causes these slow starts? I mean, I don't know. This was more than a slow start. We thought that they had kind of found it about 6 weeks into the season, and then it went back to nothing. And yeah, right now I guess we're still kind of chalking this up to the Riley Green effect, but at least I am. But yeah, I don't know if there's anything to say about it. The slow starts are because the guys that they counted on to hit this year aren't hitting.
Yeah,
pretty much. I mean, but this is traditional for the Tigers, historically speaking. And this goes back quite a ways. I mean, from my experience growing up in the 90s, even in the millennium, the Tigers always got off to a slow start. It never was right off the gate.
Well, I remember early on in the Leland era, it was the opposite. You know, people thought that Leland, his teams couldn't close, right? You know, they yeah. fell apart in 2006 and lost the division. They fell apart completely in 2009. They were, you know, it was just a bad thing. I think they had a bad second half in 2008. And, but, yeah, I don't know. I think we tend to apply patterns to things where they don't necessarily belong just because we are creatures of trying to make sense out of stuff that doesn't make any damn sense.
Agreed.
So, and then we have Spencer. And then we have Steve Butts had the two questions. I think those were the final two questions. Said, is AJ Hinch a potential trade chip at the deadline? And is Mike Trout possibly a deadline trade chip?
Wow.
Now, managers have been traded before, right? Like a handful of times.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Who was it?
Wait, John Farrell? Yeah, we got breaking news here. Is Spencer from the Heavyweight Show. Scoop Kid and Lady James were recording Heavyweights today. I was in the building. Man, you should have sent me a text, man. Been like, should I have asked him why he had the worst OPS in the MLB?
Maybe it's because he's getting haircuts at Lady James. Maybe he needs to. No, not that I don't mean to disparage Lady James' haircut. Good. Maybe he's doing that as a slump buster.
There you go.
Yeah. No, no one's going to tell him what to do at the haircut place, but no, at any rate, I'm not going to read that comment, but
it's also not surprising, these baseball players. The one thing that surprised me, like, you know, getting down there on the field, there are two players who surprised me with how large they are. Victor Reyes is one of them, and the other one is Jonathan Scope. Jonathan Scope is like 245 pounds.
A pure muscle.
Yeah, he's like, he kind of makes Spencer Torkelson look tiny. And Victor Reyes is like a skyscraper. It's kind of wild, but
yeah. Or, but you know, yeah. Who's also a big man, by the way, Michael Padilla. He is a huge man.
Well, yeah, he is
in person. I mean, it's like you see him. But you see him in person, you're like, he looks like an offensive lineman. I'm dead serious. Like, it's just
no, he is. He's like 6'7". He's got to be like three bills, right? I mean,
yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he looks like he could play left tackle. But anyway, yeah, I don't expect AJ Hinch to be traded. In any capacity, I theoretically he could be, I guess, but that doesn't seem like anything that Alavila would do or any Tigers GM. Now, Mike Trout. What's interesting is like I'm sure Mike Trout is due, I think, $37 million a year until 2030.
Yep.
So basically $300 million still, and for as good as he is, and I think every team can afford him. Realistically, we would only see one or two, maybe three teams actually be willing to pay that price, both in terms of like prospects. The Angels probably would not get nearly the return that they deserve for a player of Mike Trout's caliber just because of the length of that contract. Basically, that was a handcuff contract. He's stuck with the Angels. They're stuck with him. Even as good as he is, nobody's going to take on another 9 years of a deal or 8 years of a deal. So theoretically, he could be traded. I think it would take him, as we were talking earlier, it would take him basically demanding it. And he just doesn't seem like that type. So,
yeah. And he's going to stay low key about it. And as far as there was a question in YouTube, real quick, before I forget, about Spencer Torkelson going down to Toledo, I defensively speaking, he has the best glove at first base in the system right now. And I think he's going to have to he's just going to stay in line to figure things out for sure. And that's where I think it. And as far as Paredes goes, look, I'm going to put this on the record officially. I you know what? Look, I'm going to make a prop bet. I asked Tom Mazaway that if he could possibly do a bet with me. He didn't do this. So I'm going to ask everybody out there. Okay. If Isaac Paredes, it becomes an all-star. If Isaac Paredes has an all-star, like, okay, if he makes the all-star game, not this season rather, but if he makes an all-star appearance in the next, I don't know. I'm trying to make a bread out of this. Okay. Go ahead, Uber.
How about the Tigers, during the time the Tigers have control of Meadows, Paredes makes an all-star appearance.
Yeah. All right. Or at the end of the season, Paredes bats below 250.
Is he? What's he hitting right now?
250.
Right.
We'll figure it out. We got to make some sort of prop bet because
yeah, so he's been hot as hell and he just got to 250.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Real quick.
Spitzer was throwing out some questions there. I think, it's super annoying, mostly because people were jokingly predicting this and then it came true. that's the main thing that's annoying because, and we've talked about this before, I don't think Isak Paredes getting traded was necessarily an Alavila move. I mean, I think he was the one who pulled the trigger, right? But he's not the one who didn't play Isak Paredes at all last year. That's AJ Hinch. Paredes was passed over for Willie Castro, for Zach Short, for Harold Castro. AJ Hinch could have been playing him last year. He didn't because AJ Hinch is like anybody else. He's got people he likes and people he doesn't like. And I will say that he's not the only person that we know of who wasn't necessarily a giant fan of Isak Paredes.
We've heard some things. And
there's
a lot of fans.
I sent a whole bunch of rumors. When they traded him, I put all the rumors out there on the Discord. So if you ever want to pop in there and hear some reckless speculation that's been kind of verified multiple ways. But again, I think Tigers fans would be happy with Charles Manson right now if he was at home runs. and also probably kind of speedy, right? He's a little short guy.
And there's a lot of the fans who are trying to say they told us so. They really don't.
You don't know anything. You don't know squat, you stupid idiot.
Stop. Stop. Because everybody loved the trade. Everybody forgot that Austin Meadows has had a good month. Stop. He was in Durham the first month of the season. Tampa did not fix him. That's some sort of hex or voodoo. Look at the numbers. They're similar to what they were last year. And there's a lot of stuff behind the scene. And, people do need to chill. You're right. They need to chill out because, honestly,
all right, we're going to move on here.
I don't want to talk about it anymore. What did you tell anybody? Nothing. Everybody supported the trade. Stop. Enough.
There was nothing from an injury perspective, performance perspective from Austin Meadows that raised the red flag that he wouldn't do anything for Detroit that he did for Tampa, at least something relatively similar. It hasn't worked out so far, and it's been a weird journey to say the least, but it's way, we're years too early to decide, that trade was a mess. Because this could, this could turn around after the All-Star break in a heartbeat. Isak Paredes goes back to hitting 200, and all of a sudden Meadows comes back and flashes some power, and people forget this conversation ever happened.
I'm gonna find this real quick. But there was a tweet the other day that I was kind of like I just was like, okay, I love Jeff Rieger, by the way. Love Jeff Rieger. I talk to him all the time. He's a really nice guy. One of the best people I've ever met in this business. But come on.
He's talking about Trace Thompson, right? Trace Thompson.
No, stop. And he has this list. Come on. Really?
I do. That's a fun question, though, from about Willie Castro.
Do you
have the best arm in the Tigers off you ever seen in 10 years? I would probably go with Yoenis Cespedes, who's here for half a season, so maybe that doesn't count. But he always had a rocket launcher. Do we have this? What are we watching?
Look, just another one that left, only to find great success elsewhere. Cut it out, Rieger. Really?
He's just deliberately calling. It's fine. Other than Cespedes. Willie Castro has always had all the physical tools. It's been super annoying to watch him not have the plate discipline to get to what is actually above average raw power, or the instincts to use his speed in any real way, or the hands to play good defense, or the arm accuracy to make good throws. It's super annoying. But as an outfielder, he's been thrown a lot of got a lot of really nice throws and gunning guys down, and maybe he's found his spot finally. But yeah, now we got to work on that whole lowest exit velocity in baseball.
Yeah,
which is where he is right now.
Yeah. By the way, this is also the top 20 list sucks. Okay, absolutely sucks.
What's the top 20 list of what now?
He compiled the top 20 list of Detroiters, Michiganders who have left here only have a crazy amount of success elsewhere.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
Didn't do Steve much Ballmer? Else. Madonna?
Yeah. The Temptations. Let's see here.
Jeff Daniels.
Yeah.
Jeff Daniels still lives here.
Yeah.
Well, he left for a while. All
right. Yeah. You can go on Chelsea and see him walking down the street.
although he did spell Luis Gonzalez. Luis Gonzalez. I don't know who Luis Gonzalez is, but crazy.
Hey, it's Luis Gonzalez.
Yeah.
How you doing? But yeah, so I think and Spencer is just rattling off these questions.
Yeah, Spencer's giving us the best questions.
What's a bigger loss to the Tigers coaching staff, Chris Fetter or AJ Hinch?
Fetter.
Well, yeah, but I get the feeling that Fetter would probably leave with Hinch, right? And maybe not. Maybe based on, you know, he wanted to be here because he lived here, but apparently he lives down in Florida now. So, yeah, I mean, manager is one thing. A coach is a guy who's actually, you know, working with the players to get better. And not to say that Hinch doesn't do drills and stuff like that, but Fetter is – the Fetter effect seems very real. And so I would hate to lose him, yeah.
Yeah. I can't see myself doing that, so – But anyway, that last half hour is pretty fun. Thanks for everybody participating in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Spencer's actually going to be our producer when we do the live show. So he's going to be the technical director. So it's kind of cool when you're like, oh, yeah, we have a technical director, and that's going to be badass. So expect some I expect Spencer to chime in. And don't forget, I got to plug these guys too. The Heavyweights are back, 5-7. At woodwardsports.com, and you can find them on the YouTube channel. They're doing a fantastic job. That show is entertaining, honestly. If you guys off the different beaten path a little bit, Spencer and Easy do a good job. So check them out every day from 5-7 over at woodwardsports.com. So
I love the clips that you'll throw out there on your Twitter.
Yeah, I had the Full House theme stuck in my head. The Full House. They were playing it earlier while they're editing it when I was there, and it was funny the entire time. I'm like, man, I'm gonna have that song stuck in my head. And then I made an appearance in the video today because it needed to have a goat in it. So there's a goat in the video, and that would be me. But no, honestly, those guys do a fantastic job, and Spence is like the utility man of being a producer over there. So props to working for a great team like that. So we're out of here. Thanks so much for listening. I will be actually. I'm not going to be at this. Oh, I forgot that I requested. I'm going to be at the series, but as a fan, because I forgot that I asked for this weekend off for press credentials. I thought I did. Maybe I didn't submit it, but anyway, whatever. Doesn't matter. I'm still going, probably going to go to the game on Sunday, but I'm going to the Cleveland series. I got a doubleheader. I don't remember why now, because Monday I have a doubleheader.
Again. 4th of July.
Yeah, 4th of July. Day. Yeah, so.
Today. We celebrate our Independence Day. For two baseball
games. There you go.
That's such a great line. Spencer, Perry, thanks so much for the comments. Everybody, thanks so much. No, thank you. And we'll be back next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. And hopefully, I think, you know, we'll be at Woodward next week. So hopefully.
Real quick. More yes, hits sir. This weekend, Bobby Witt Jr. or Riley Green?
Ooh. That's a good question. I'm going to go Riley Green.
Yeah, I'll go with Riley Green. Although Bobby Witt Jr. is the fastest player in baseball this year. So he might.
I'm going Bobby Witt. More.
You're going Bobby Witt? Might get a couple more. Did Kansas City call up Vinny?
Vespertino.
Vespertino, yeah. So Vinny. There's, yeah. Oh man, so we're gonna see a lot of prospects this weekend, and hopefully you see Spencer shirtless behind home plate. So other than that, thanks so much. We'll see you next week. Have a good week, everybody.